Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Today, I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this, the concept of Man Show.
Warning. The Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting in studio with David Niles. Juan is back on the buttons. El producer Don Juan himself. It's good to have you back again, my friend from Colombia. He had a 2-week trip.
He's looking extra Columbarian today. Columbarian? I'm pretty sure that's how you say it.
Okay. That's how we're starting it. All right. Good. Good. This is good. We also have a very special guest this evening with us. I'm really excited because you were coming here for the Diocese of Tulsa, and then we piggybacked off this. You were invited here by Hannah, is that correct?
Yeah, and Father Vince Fernandez.
Okay, Father Vince Fernandez too, as well. Okay, so we have Nathaniel here from Exodus 90.
Nathaniel and versus something.
Ben Versi.
Yeah, that's close enough.
I said Ben Versus, didn't I?
I said Versus.
Ben Versi.
So I was going to try to remember it. It didn't work.
valiant effort.
Thank you. I gave it a shot. You know, at least yes. I had the courage to go for it.
Yeah.
The fortitude you exude.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. So Nathaniel, you are part of Exodus 90. Exodus 90 has been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show this year. Mm-hmm. We're excited to have them. We hosted a whole group of Exodus 90 men going through Exodus 90 up until Easter and into
And then we did a Lent to 90 Exodus Lent group.
We also
did
an Exodus Lent group for the guys who weren't doing Exodus 90. So and that was our second time to do Exodus 90. We are all in Exodus 90. So it's good to have somebody in studio who works for Exodus 90 here with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
So you are the...
Before we go any further, I feel like that we should discuss just for a second.
Okay.
We're men of tradition.
The wine.
We should...
This is our wine.
Talk about the drink that we're having this evening.
Please.
It's Catholic Man Show wine. Winged Hussar wine.
Yes.
Can you? I don't know if we can get the label.
Boom.
There it is. Check that out. That's a winged hussar guy right there.
Yeah, warrior. Jason Zimdars created the label for us. Are you familiar with the winged hussars?
I'm not.
So Dave. They were a cavalry unit, a Polish cavalry unit, circa the Battle of Vienna. They had a 100-year undefeated streak in battle. So it's nice that the Polish actually have like some history of winning battles and not just like losing a lot of them, you know?
Yeah.
And so in the Battle of Vienna, this is like the sequel to the Battle of Lepanto. The Turks came up. They had Vienna under siege. Vienna was like, help, sent word to all the allies. And they were like, yeah, I know that we said we'd help, but like, we don't feel very good about it right now.
You don't feel the odds are not stacked against us.
Right, like, I don't want to send the army down there because then who's going to protect France, you know? And anyway, so the Polish king, Jan Zubajewski, he was like, we will go. And it's like Polish, however they say it in Polish. And so he led his best cavalry unit, the Winged Hussars. They departed from the Our Lady of Częstochowa, marched to Vienna, invoked the Holy Name of Mary, and charged into battle. And
like
just
10-1 odds,
slaughtered the Turks. They turned and fled.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and
now
so
I got some history.
Yeah, fun fact. We'll finish it up. After they turned and fled, they were going through the spoils of war, and they found all these coffee beans, which was at the time exclusively a Muslim drink. And they're like, hey, let's try it. Let's just see what it's like. And so then some of the Viennese bakers started baking these rolls in the shape of the Muslim flag, the crescent moon. The croissant was born and as a result of this battle. And so they sat around eating croissants and drinking coffee. As like I'm eating your flag and drinking your like the spoils of war. Like
wow.
I'm drinking your fancy beverage and eating your flag. You know, as like a symbol of victory. So for hundreds of years, it's been a tradition on May 12th to September 12th. I'm sorry, not May 12th. September 12th. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
To drink coffee and eat croissants
and invoke the Holy Name of Mary.
And yeah, exactly. And so the 9/11. That's why they've attacked on 9/11 was because it was hearkening back to the Battle of Vienna. That was the last day the Muslims had possession of the West. And so it was like a symbol of them saying like, hey, for us, this battle's not over.
Wow, that's very interesting.
And JP II, the Polish priest, you know, Polish pope that he was, realized it and put our Holy Name of Mary back onto the calendar that year.
On the universal, he said, I see what you did there. And I remember how we beat you last time. So the next day, he put the Holy Name of Mary back on the universal calendar. So
wow, this is great history.
Isn't that epic?
Yeah, this is
like,
very
it's
cool.
Like that's a story manly enough for a manly wine.
No, I liked it a lot.
So this is a Cabernet. It's a red,
mm-hmm.
but it's Cabernet really, mm-hmm. And it's aged in Buffalo Trace bourbon barrels.
Mm.
It's just fantastic.
Just a hint of it.
Yeah, it's delicious wine.
Yeah,
and I love that history is just so. It makes. I mean, we're so far from battles right now, it just seems. In
totally.
Faith, right? So like learning and understanding our history when our forefathers, if you will, like actually went out and fought this fight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And who knows how we have to fight it today, but we don't have the courage usually to fight it at all.
Yeah.
In the ways that we don't even know that we have to mm-hmm. each day. So I love that, learning that history, internalizing it and realizing what we have to do.
Me too, yeah. Because I know we just don't appreciate the faith at all. I mean, not the way that people have in the past. We can just go to mass any day. You can go to mass twice a day, anytime you want, you know? And in the past, like, people were like, literally, I'm charging into battle. Like, I might die in the next 5 minutes for this, you know, so that I can continue to practice my faith and receive the Eucharist. Like, I don't have to do that.
Right.
And I've never been even come close to having to do it, like you were saying. And so what would I do if all of a sudden it was like that? I hope that I would perform
practice
honorably.
Fortitude right. is required for the virtuous life
mm-hmm.
to carry out the virtuous life.
It's almost like we need to practice asceticism or something. Like there should be a program, I think. Someone should do this. They should start a program of like ascetic
practices.
Disciplines or something.
Coupled with
like
prayer.
With, and with fraternity.
Along with all the other guys.
Yeah, like you should do it together.
But it's got to be long enough to actually set in. We don't
right.
want to just like
not
flash,
like oh we did a
cool
weekend
once.
Of yeah. something you right. know.
I'd say at least 3 months.
Yeah, roughly.
Nobody's
ballparking it.
Yeah. Nobody's going to do that, though. You know what we should do to get people to come? Add cold showers.
Okay. Interesting.
And we should charge them $10 to do it.
No, every month.
Oh, okay. So you are traveling around in an Exodus RV.
That's right.
Okay, let's talk about this. You did a video for us to let everybody know that you're coming on the show. We see this big Exodus 90 RV. You're pulling it with a Ford F-450, which is epic.
It's a beast of a truck.
It's my wife's truck, she'll tell you.
But so you are traveling around with your wife and children around the country.
That's right.
Okay, so tell me about this experience. What's going on here?
Yeah, so with Exodus, of course, we're more than just Exodus 90. And,
right.
And even Exodus 90, for those guys who have done it already, they know, like, this is clearly not just a product of a board meeting or something, right? It's clearly personal about the relationships between the brothers in the fraternity and, of course, the relationship with Christ. So how do we take that a step further is kind of what we were thinking in the office. Like, how do we go and be with the men? We want to be united with them, hear from them, know about their lives, know what we can offer them as we continue to develop formative products for them, if you will, or exercises or content, whatnot. So the idea was, all right, well, what if we originally, this is the original idea four years ago. What if I go out and like just spend 3 weeks at a parish with a few guys, train them to be leaders in their parish, and then send them out to lead Exodus fraternities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the board was like, yeah, we're going to be way bigger than that. And that would be like 13 parishes a year. We like your thinking, but we don't like that. Oh, and by the way, we have no money for an RV. Like, what right. do you think yeah. we got? Right. So that idea got squashed.
Uh-huh.
And then we thought of some other ideas, and which is when we worked on our biblical series, which is what used to be called Day 91. Okay. Come back around. We decided.
Is it not called 91 anymore?
No, it's not. We referenced Day 91
I'm
as
like
something.
Currently doing it. And I.
Yeah, the biblical series.
I think
now.
Maybe it's my dad has been doing it for years and he's been calling it that. So I just kept calling it that.
Yeah. Well, that name originally came from Exodus Men. They're like, hey, what's Day 91? And we're just like,
yeah.
Guess we have a solution that we need to come up with here. So, yeah. So a few years passed by and it came from something called Project Dive Bar. All right. This is our code name for it.
Okay. All right.
And you think about bands, like what are the dive bars they have to play to get to the bigger stages, right? And so we had to figure out, well, if we have this message that's so important to bring to people out there, how do we get to those bigger stages to bring this message that more people can hear about this roadmap to freedom? Well, you gotta start small. So here we are, parish to parish, Exodus Tailgate Tour.
Okay.
Yeah. You're just tailgating.
That's right.
And you were like, guys, I didn't want to say this, but I told you so.
We'll wait a few more days.
Yeah. All right, we're here with Nathaniel from Exodus 90. We'll be right back.
There's a common thread among thousands of formerly sinful people we now call saints. They had a relationship with God, which then inspired them to set the world on fire, as St. Catherine of Siena put it. But more importantly, and more specifically, it meant they put in the time. They sat with the Lord. They spoke with Him. They listened to Him daily. They unveiled their hearts and wounds and problems to Him. They offered Him thanks and gratitude. They left their sufferings with Him on the altar. They begged for His help. My question to you is, are you putting in the time? I know that I've sat in front of the church or sat in adoration making this mental grocery list of things that I want. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about time to build a consistent, honest relationship, time to speak, and time to listen. Dave and I have talked about on the show before that if you don't have an adoration hour once a week, are you really taking your faith life seriously? Are you really taking your prayer life seriously? But sometimes you need a guide to help you in this holy hour. And so Exodus 90 has specifically put together a guide for you to help with your holy hour. In the show notes, you'll find a simple breakdown that shows you how to structure your time with the Lord. So this guide is also mobile friendly. If you go to exodus90.com/TCMS, that's TCMS, the Catholic Man Show, exodus90.com/TCMS, you can get a free mobile friendly guide on how to structure your holy hour. Highly recommended. Go check it out.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan and Nathaniel Ben Versi.
That's it.
Boom.
Nailed it.
Okay, so I kind of find it hard to imagine that someone who's been listening to our show for any length of time is like really that unfamiliar with Exodus 90, but maybe like
especially because we highlight it every single episode.
Right, exactly. But what's the like? How did it get started? Because I heard this story about like some seminarians who like started it. I don't know if that's a true story.
James.
If this is like more like a legend, you know. What's the real story?
Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of started, and it started in a seminary, right? So okay. Father Brian Dorr was a formator at Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland.
Okay.
And he realized, wow, these seminarians aren't very well formed, and it's my responsibility as a formator to assure that they are prepared for the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
But they're attached to the things of this world, so attached that it's actually hard for them to hear God's will.
Like and, a lot of like just about a like most guys.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And things that maybe surprise some of us. But shouldn't, like, yeah, they were still attached to maybe alcohol or working too much or pornography. Mm-hmm. Like, these are things are real. What is Satan's attacking us with as laymen, it's happening in the seminary.
Habits
as well.
Don't go away just because you joined the seminary.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Vices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So he was in the seminary. He's like, all right, well, I'm going to take a few guys and we're just going to live the Christian life more fully.
Mm-hmm.
And so he turned to prayer, which, of course, they already had a prayer life set up in the seminary, which is good, but focusing and doing it more fruitfully, if you will. And then asceticism, these acts of self-denial. To define it simply. And then fraternity. Like, let's have a real set of accountability here with guys who are living a certain prayer and ascetic life and then being held accountable to it. In the midst, we're going to read through the book of Exodus because the Israelites and their journey with our Lord is just a really great witness and example and something we can relate to still today, even though it was millennia ago. So he did that. He set out some disciplines. There was no 90 at that time. It was just, we're just going to live this and we're going to read through scripture.
So it didn't end.
Essentially, yeah.
It's just, hey, you're a man, like, get used to it.
Yeah.
Life's tough, get a helmet.
And so that's what they did. And so they went forth with that. And it was super successful that first year that he did it. And these, you know, number of guys, not the whole seminary, just a group of guys, were like, that was the hardest year of seminary. And it was the most fruitful. I'm so grateful for it. So we did it again the next year and again the next year. After that, James Baxter, who is my teammate and our CEO, he was at a different seminary, but was good friends with this priest from childhood on. And he was leaving seminary. He didn't know really what he wanted to do with his life.
Was he in that original group?
He was not.
Okay.
No. So he had never done Exodus.
Okay.
All he was handed was a PDF or a Word document that had all these testimonies in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Father Dorr's like, we need to bring this to laymen. And James was like, I don't really even know what this is. And by what you've told me, who's going to do this?
Seems like it sucks really bad.
Exactly. But the testimonies, of course, were so strong. So they decided to give it a shot. And Father Dorr was then going to write reflections because, of course, he couldn't be with these people in person.
Yeah.
Like he could in the seminary. He's going to write over reflection every single day and give them a piece of Exodus, the scripture, each day. And he sent that out as an email for 90 days. And that happened. And they recirculated these emails after that first set of 90 days for about a year, year and a half. And then they bound them into a book. They're like, well, we should probably put these in a book. And so they did so. And you can imagine what 90 emails in a book look like.
Mm-hmm.
About that good, but it was so fruitful nonetheless. Like people, simply because they were living prayer, asceticism, and fraternity, it didn't matter about the grammatical errors or whatever was in those emails. Like they were just encountering Christ, which was a huge gift. Meantime, I joined Exodus then a couple years into it or so, and my first desire after having done Exodus myself twice was, yeah, let's clean up this content and make it even better, but keeping the best parts that Father Dorr had already established and the Holy Spirit was clearly using. And so we did that. Afterwards, we developed the Day 91, which is now the biblical series content, 20 exercises that walk through the four pillars of formation and allow men to not just be free once, but to have that established freedom that they found in Exodus 90 and bring it forward through ongoing formation as a fraternity so it can be lasting. About 3 years worth of content, same amount of time, Christ walked with the apostles.
So my wife and I were doing Genesis right now. She didn't do Exodus 90, but we're doing the Genesis thing like together. That way I have someone to do it with.
Nice.
One thing that I cannot remember to save my life is to like say, be thankful, raise my glass before I have it. I just cannot do it. I try. I did it just now though. Before, yeah. Like as we were started, I did it. So I was really proud of myself here on the show that it's on video,
That's evidence. Yeah.
It is evidence,
so
right.
When you go to your next fraternity meeting with your wife, you can show her the video and say,
right.
Hey, this is how
look,
I did.
Honey, I did it at least once.
It's working.
It's working.
Now, what David's talking about, just for context here, right? So in these 20 different exercises.
Oh, right. There's 20 explain that.
Yeah. So there's different disciplines for all 20 exercises. And none of them are as hard as Exodus 90. Because that's that time of purifying, if you will, purifying the gold. But when you take purified gold and it's all heated up and molten and melted, right? And you just leave it on a table, what's going to happen? Well, probably burn a hole in the table and then it'll just like take
ooze everywhere.
Yeah. And whatever debris is around it, it's not pure anymore.
Right.
So the same thing happens to us. If we just finish Exodus 90 and then let ourselves out into the world, we're just going to take up all debris, fall all over the place. We have to put ourselves in the hands of a creator, somebody who is going to form us into something beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that's what that time of formation is, these other 20 exercises that walk through salvation history and let the word, the logos, form us over time.
So I'm just a huge fan of Exodus 90. I think really this last time what I reflected and the thing I really learned is just how noisy our appetites are and just how it's like this internal just sound and noise. And when you learn to kind of quiet them, all of a sudden, like, wow, I can really pray. You know, it's sort of like a background noise. You don't know it's there until it goes away.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you say, wow, what's that? Oh, that's quiet. And our lives, the people's lives today, everybody is just packed with noise. It's just jammed with distraction, noise all the time. So, I mean, it was just so beautiful to have that, you know, and Exodus 90 is just it's so awesome. It's done. I cannot say how much it's done for me because it really has changed my life.
Praise God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love your concept on the noise. Kenny Chesney, for those of you who are listening on that country music station down in Texas.
KSEY.
That's right. Kenny Chesney has a song called Noise. It came out maybe 3-4 years ago or something like that. And he talks about this exact thing, right? All the noise in the world. But then his response, you know, as a musician and whatnot is, you know, there's all this noise. And so we just make noise.
Uh-huh.
As a response, we scream, we shout, we make noise. It's just like, wow, that's a response.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to do it.
Right. But what are our responses to this noise? Some of us just like shelter ourselves in and just like, I can't handle it. Some of us participate in it. Some of us just bombard ourselves with it more or distract ourselves more with other noise. But you're right. Mm-hmm.
So you said your title is the something of mission.
Director
of mission. So what is the real mission of Exodus 90? Because I have to believe it's not actually just to get people better at taking cold showers or, you know, like fasting more. What is the real mission?
Yeah, decrease water bill and energy bill.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's about
money.
It's about going green.
It's very green. It's very green, yeah. That's why I'm driving around an F-450 all over the country. Yeah, so it's to free and to form the men. Uh-huh. So the very things I was talking about earlier, we want these men to be free, and then we want to be able to form them into the right man that they know they need to be, like what God wanted them to be, for the good of the family. It's not just for these men. So for the men who are like, man, I really like this for myself. I need to spend more time on myself. I need to work on myself. Okay, well, you got some of it. And a lot of times we think of that way when we work on develop in our Christian life. Like, well, I need to be better before I can relate to God, or I need to be better before I do ministry, or I need to whatever. There's some truths in there, but absolutely, like, we have to be men for others, first and foremost. So if we're not doing Exodus for others, yes, for ourselves, sure, but it can't solely be for that. Like, it's got to be for others.
Yeah, no, I just totally agree. That's totally my experience. So the first time I did Exodus 90, I was like gritting, bearing down, trying to get through it, right? It was one of those, I wasn't really wanting to do it, but all my buddies were doing it. Okay, yes, I'll do it. I'm not gonna be the guy that's not gonna do it.
Yeah, because we would have made fun of you.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. But the whole time, I just felt like I was, you know, the dog biting on the chew toy, just hanging on just as long as I could until that day 90, right?
Mm-hmm. Like that moment when you're trying to get up out of the water on skis, and you're just
right.
Like,
you're just getting drowned. You're drowning the whole time.
You're not on top of the water yet. You're like, I'm gonna get there.
Yeah, the water's just like, you know, just smoking you in the face, and you're just trying to breathe. You know, that's how I felt the whole time. Okay, but the second time I did Exodus 90, I was like, I was just in such a different disposition. It wasn't about I want to do this for myself, but it was more of I was just so much more intentional with my asceticism practices. You know, before I got into the cold showers, it was like, this is for the virtue of, you know, growth and virtue for my wife, or this is for a specific virtue for Luke, one of my sons, you know, that he can, you know, he's about to receive First Holy Communion, that he will like embrace that and understand as fully as he can. So I just used like all the things that were happening in my life, and just very intentional with those asceticism practices. And it just was such a different experience for me the second time, and so much more fruitful for me the second time, because I stopped thinking, it was is a mentality of I'm not thinking about it for myself, but to help.
Makes the cold showers a lot easier.
Yeah, to help like my family, to help other people. Yeah.
I'm so glad that that is the case. And a lot of guys who have done Exodus 90 a second time, now we even have Exodus 90 round two, different reflections, same scripture, same disciplines.
Right.
For that reason, right? Mm-hmm. To open our eyes up. I think an example of guys, like where we often are at is like, okay, maybe I'm struggling with chastity, right? And instead of becoming more Christian, we become like more anti-masturbationalist or something like this. It's like that becomes our religion. Mm. And instead of working on chastity or just simply working on a relationship with Jesus Christ, we focus so much on one thing. And Satan loves that. Because then every time we fall, it's even a bigger deal. Because that's the thing we've been working on.
You're still a failure.
Right. Where with Exodus, it's much more about, hey, I don't want to be chased just so I can go around telling other guys, I'm more chaste than you. But right. Really, that's kind of how we work at it sometimes. Like, I just want to be free from this so that I can be the chase guy. You wouldn't say that out loud.
Right.
But we internally, for selfish, prideful reasons.
Right.
Whereas, if we're doing this for others, it's like, all right, I just want to know Jesus. I want to be in a relationship with him. Because that's what's going to allow me to be a man.
And that's where he can grow. That's where he can use you and form you.
Right, absolutely.
So, all right, so we'll continue this conversation. I do have a question about, like, what is the biggest obstacle people have when you're driving around, what they say is the biggest obstacle about Exodus 90 that they have. We'll be right back. Last week, we got our 50 people. Let's do it again. Let's do another 50.
Mark Lozano over at Christ Center Capital is doing something absolutely crazy. We talked about it. He said, this is something I want to do. I said, okay, if that's what you want to do, let's move forward. Let's do it. 50 people, the next 50 people who sign up using promo code TCMS2022, that's TCMS2022 over at ChristCenterCapital.com gets an absolutely free subscription to Christ Center Capital. Christ Center Capital is a watchdog site for Judeo-Christian investors. So if you're looking to put your money in an ethical way and get sound advice from Mark Lozano, go to ChristCenteredCapital.com. Use promo code TCMS2022. The first 50 people who do so get a free subscription. We want to thank Mark Lozano and Christ Center Capital for being a sponsor of The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. If you're wanting to grow in holiness, if you're wanting to grow closer to our Lord, and you have not tried Exodus 90, I ask that you pray about that and see if that is what the Lord is calling you to. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe just do it anyway.
And maybe just do it anyway. Maybe, maybe you're not listening very well anyway.
Yeah, maybe so, the fact that we just said you should do it is the Lord is telling you.
If you're looking for a sign, here it is. Nathaniel, you travel all around the U.S. in this RV with your wife, two kids, one on the way. Shout out to her. She is a saint in the making. Let's go ahead and open up her cause for canonization. She is seems to be an awesome woman.
She's got a nice truck, though.
She has a nice Ford F450.
Yeah.
But so as you travel around, what's the one thing that guys, like when they walk up to you and say, like, yeah, I've heard Exodus 90, guys have done it, like, but I don't want to do it because of X. What typically is the X that people are hesitant about?
The number one thing that they say. So it's the difference between what they say and what's true.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I totally think that's the case.
So the first one is always...
Because it's an excuse. The first one's an excuse.
Cold showers.
Right. Yeah. I knew that was going
to be... I was thinking, if I could put $1 million down, it would be cold showers.
What do you think the next two are? There's three top ones.
Okay, so it's going to be the cold holy showers. No.
It's not the holy hour.
No, I really? Say that.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
Alcohol.
Giving up alcohol and then giving that's up right. sweets.
It's alcohol and not watching sports.
Not watching sports.
Yeah, or TV, movies.
So it's all ascetic practices. It's all right.
They don't even think about the prayer. And a lot of guys...
Honestly, that's the hardest
part. That's the hardest part.
The first time I did it, the 20 minutes...
That is
minutes,
the hardest part, is the full hour of prayer every day, every
single
day.
Well, yeah, and like, I was already praying a rosary every day. I was already like praying like...
Had a prayer routine going.
A semi-good amount, right? But just that 20 minutes of like quiet prayer, mm-hmm. you know, like, what am I supposed to do?
You know, like, I guess I'll just keep sitting here. Like, all right, Jesus, I still love you. I think you're really great. We talked about my sins already. So. but it was so hard. Yeah. You know, every day. But that was the thing that that I fell in love with.
Yeah, that's
the the 20 minutes. It wasn't giving up chocolate, which is the hardest for me. It wasn't anything else. It was like, oh, I have a relationship now with Jesus. I'm not just like praying. Before I like prayed a lot, not a lot, but I prayed like a regular amount, a decent amount. But I wasn't actually praying. I was just saying prayers. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Big difference.
I would agree that it is the hardest, is actually learning this understanding of silent prayer and participating in it. Because it does take such fortitude, as you were mentioning earlier, as such a strong virtue and necessary virtue. Because, I mean, it's like being in the back of a car, you know, at 13 years old with your first girlfriend or something, right? And it's just like, okay, dad's driving, we're going to the movies, and you got 20 minutes of silence right there. Because nobody's talking. You know, right. It's totally awkward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you get to the movies, and it's just like, wow, it's still awkward because I can hear my dad eating popcorn behind me.
Yeah.
So right. Still more silence. Uh-huh. But over time, of course, we practice because we have the fortitude. We desire so much to have this relationship with a woman. Maybe it's that girl. Maybe it's somebody else. And then we grow in a relationship with them. We get through that awkwardness. We learn how to communicate with a woman from our 13-year-old state onward as we get older and practice. Had we never talked to a girl again from 13 to, let's say, 30, guess what? It'd be just as awkward.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
But we practice.
But yeah, and that's actually the most intoxicating part, right? Once you get into the habit of doing it, that's the part that you can't give up. It's for me, it was this grind to keep this time period and be very intentional about it, especially on the weekends when your whole routine gets thrown off anyway. The Saturdays and Sundays are the hardest part because Monday through Friday, you can set your own routine with work, and then all of a sudden, Saturday, Sunday are thrown in the mix. So you have to be very intentional those days, yeah. Right? But it's that, you know, that time with our Lord, that once you develop that habit, once you develop that virtue, it's the one that you don't want to let go the most. It's the most intoxicating. It's the one that you continue to go back to all the time.
Yeah. I agree with that. And it's also the most important in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. Not absolutely. We can't separate these things. Christ told us to do all of these things, to pray, to practice asceticism, mm-hmm. and to live for eternity. Okay? He modeled them for us. It's in the Old Testament. It's in the New Testament. And God came down incarnate and modeled it. Okay, great. But when it comes to prayer itself, like if you just did asceticism with no prayer, it's like, well,
I mean, we're not Stoics.
Right, exactly.
Absolutely. So we need this relationship. But how are we going to be the head of our household, the leader of our household, or whatever our vocation might be? As men, we're called to lead. It's just naturally how we're created. But we're either going to lead from ourselves, which will probably, as I like to say about myself, if I was leading my family without prayer, I would just take that ship and hit every iceberg in the Atlantic, you know, and then my marriage would sink.
Yeah, maybe on purpose even.
You know? Honestly.
Oh, yeah? Well, take this!
I mean, we have so many stats about that, right? Marriages do sink. Well, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Well, if I don't want that, I can't rely on myself. And my wife shouldn't rely on me if I'm not willing to rely on God. Mm-hmm. And participate in his headship, Christ's headship, which is what my headship is supposed to be based on.
And the sink rate of men who choose that every day is super low. You yeah. know, if you commit to your wife every day to be the man that she deserves, you know, that a man who follows Christ, who sacrifices himself, who sees himself as the servant of the household, mm-hmm. That, you know, if a woman lives with that kind of man, she doesn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we talked to John Leonetti one time, and he challenged Dave and I, said, instead of saying, I love you, honey, when you leave for work in the day, he said, say, I will sacrifice for you today.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, then come back at the end of the day and tell me it's not different.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's easy to just say, I love you.
Yeah.
It's not as easy to say, I'm going to sacrifice for you today.
And it's certainly a precedent in the eyes of the wife, too. Mm-hmm. I think it might be easy. I'm not a woman, right? So maybe I project here. But I watch my wife. She's at home with two children. And I look at her when she's at home with two children, or like when she's out and I have to take care of the two children. I'm like, I don't know how you do this all day. So I can see her saying, yeah, my husband goes and sits on the computer all day. Like, uh-huh, and I have right. to deal with two
he
children.
He gets to go talk to adults.
Right. You know? Yeah. So I could see like Satan working in that. mm-hmm. and if them not if they don't see and understand, like, actually, yes, it might not be as hard as what you're doing, but I'm going to do it for you. I'm going to work for the common good here for you. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. I'm glad John shared that with you.
Yeah, it was very memorable uh-huh. for me.
So word on the street is that employees of Exodus 90 have to take cold showers every day. Is this true?
It is true.
You've got cold water in the trailer?
Yes, we do.
You have plenty of cold water.
That's right. Yeah, the interesting thing about the trailer is the cold water is way colder in the winter.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because it's almost outside.
Freezing.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the tank. I have to turn on my tank heaters. And the people are like, oh, you get to put your tank heaters on? Yes, so it stays above 35 degrees. Uh-huh.
I'll gladly change you, trade you.
Yeah. I can't figure out why Exodus 90 is not popular in northern Canada. Oh, you know?
Yeah. But then in the summer times, of course, the water is a little bit warmer in the tank, but
right.
mm-hmm. is what it is. So, but yeah, year round, that's what we do.
So was that hard?
Well,
has it gotten to the point where your body just gets used to it?
You asked the question earlier, what was the number one thing that guys say, you know, right. is the hardest thing, why they don't do Exodus, the hurdle, if you will. And we realized that, James realized that 3-4 years ago. And he said, hey, when it was just James and Mark, Pika and I, what can we do to help these men who keep telling us, wow, if you didn't have cold showers or whatever, I couldn't do cold showers. Okay, what if we tell them this, person to person, not like broadcasting it, but like, hey, if you take cold showers for 90 days, I'm going to take it year round. Take it every day. Like, just do it for 90 days. I'll do it for you every day. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we do. We offer it up. Yes, for our families, certainly, but for Exodus men, for sure.
Hmm.
Every day.
Yeah, and you know, it's just, you guys are living what you preach. But well, you know what? The guys who say, oh, it's cold showers. If you said, you know what? I'm like one of the top dogs at Exodus 90. I hereby release you from the cold showers. You, personally, sir, don't have to take them. He's still not going to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we have good evidence. I like your intuition there. I'm glad you know that. I didn't know that when I started, uh-huh. but you're right. So we did Exodus Lent, right, which you've invited people into.
Uh-huh.
And what are the three things we took out of Exodus Lent?
The cold showers, the alcohol, and you're allowed to watch sporting events with other people.
That's right.
So the three biggest things.
Right.
And is our like rate of getting new men up there? Sure, we get some, but it's not nearly as much as we thought.
Uh-huh.
And we're realizing it's because it's a straw man. These people are projecting this straw man. Like, I couldn't do it for these three reasons, when really it's very different reasons. Either they don't want a relationship with Christ, and the silent prayer is tough. If you don't want a relationship with the Father or with Christ, or you don't want to sit in silence and realize your own self, wherever you're at, yeah, then that's hard, the prayer aspect. Or if you just don't want to hang out with other men, or if you just don't want to change your life because it's too comfortable. And a lot of us are at that point at some point.
I think a lot of it comes down to it's too hard to to harness their appetites. Because, you know, mm-hmm. when I see a piece of chocolate cake, it's like, I really want that.
Yeah.
And to say no... it's even harder when you're not doing Exodus 90 to say mm-hmm. no, because I don't have any rules.
Right.
I'm a rule follower. So it's like, oh, the rules, I can't, you know. It's like, yeah. This is a rule.
It's motivating.
Right, yeah. But I think a lot of people just cannot say no to themselves. And so they come up with an excuse.
Yeah.
So like if someone's listening and you find yourself someone who's been making excuses for Exodus 90, maybe if it keeps coming up, maybe the Lord is calling you to do it, and you just need to get a good fraternity,
yeah.
you know, because that's going to make a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, and even for me, like, before I even did Exodus 90, I thought, no, I'm okay. I have my appetites under control. Like, that's just kind of the thought process.
Because you don't really like food.
That I had. it's like, I just thought, you know, oh, I have my appetites under control. No problem. But when you go for a full 90 days, the Lord very mercifully shows you things that you're attached to that you had no idea that you were actually attached to. I did not realize that there were times where I did want to eat between meals, or I did not realize the comforts of you know, checking social media, or just my habits of picking up my phone in awkward moments, or, you know, there's just little things that I thought, oh no, I have no problems with that. Until you're like 50 days in and you realize, I actually do have problems with that. So, anyway, we'll keep talking about this on the other side of the break. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Hey, I'm Adam Minahan, and this is David Niles from The Catholic Man Show.
And we are so excited because we are going on pilgrimage to Ireland. We're going this September, September 15th through the 24th. We're going to go to some amazing Catholic places in the country. As you know, the Catholic tradition in Ireland is so deep and rich. And while we're there, we're also going to be visiting some distilleries, if you can even imagine that, you know, us, the Catholic Man Show. So we're going on basically a cathedral and distillery pilgrimage to Ireland. It's going to be awesome.
And because we're going on a distillery tours that are not typical for the tourists, Dave, we're not taking a bunch of people. We're not taking 60 people. We're not taking 50 people. We're capping this off at 30 people because we want to be able to We want it to be intimate. We want it to be able to go to places that normal tourists don't get a chance to go to. So go to selectinternationaltours.com/Catholic Man Show for more information.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. Special guest, it's Nathaniel Benversi. Benversi.
That's it.
Benversi. Got it. It's in. I got it.
Two for three.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, two out of three.
If you were, if two you were out of three Major League Baseball, you'd be making a lot of money as a batting average.
True dat.
So.
True dat. So, okay, so we talked a lot about cold showers, but I just want to ask you, as somebody who takes a cold shower every day, and I think like this is like really maybe some of the prime stuff right here. Do you have any tips or tricks? Because when I was talking to Mark Q, who also worked, he gave me some strategies.
Yeah.
A strategy. So I want to know if you have any, like, here's a cold shower rookie mistake or something. Like, what's the best way to physically do it?
Well, I would say my strategy when I first started is probably a better strategy than now. But it's good for first timers, right?
Okay.
So there's a few things you could do. One, don't put your head in right away, especially if it's the wintertime. Just do that last, because you're going to lose so much heat right off your head, you know?
Okay.
That's one strategy, especially if you have a lot of hair, you know, Jesus hair or whatever. You know,
I don't got to worry about that.
Yeah, me neither. Anyway, but that's one thing. Secondly, you could use a washcloth, right? And so you get your washcloth wet, you get yourself wet, then you just turn off the shower. Then you have the washcloth. I'm making people's asceticism easier here. Your body, body heat, it warms up the water. Warms up the water in the washcloth, so it's not nearly as miserable.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
And that's an option. Okay.
Okay.
And then you, of course, just the standard of like turning the water on and off when you soap, right? So you don't need to have it on the whole time. But for me, I don't do those things anymore. I actually haven't used soap in 4 years.
I actually don't shower.
You know, like people existed before soap, so I figured it's fine.
Yeah. It's true though. I haven't used soap for at least 4 years, probably a little longer.
So what do you do instead?
So, okay.
I know you got to do something.
Right. No.
Really?
Yeah. And I use deodorant. I realize that's a line that is too far.
Okay.
But in terms of simplicity, like I don't shave, clearly.
Okay. Yeah.
I lost my razor once.
You actually did yesterday. He was clean shaven yesterday.
That's right.
It's amazing.
Everybody has their own cross.
Right. Yeah. Well, when you get holier, it just happens.
Yeah, he sneezed and all of a sudden there it was. Oh. Yeah.
Benedict again. Here we go. Yes. I don't use anything. It was actually stemmed from this man. I was at an auto parts store. And there's an old man. I was asking him. I was just getting into cars. And I said, hey, do you think I need this product? And he looks at me. He goes, look, man. You see this wall of stuff that every auto parts store has next to its checkout or close to the checkout counter? He goes, that entire wall, none of that was here when I was a kid. Our cars ran just fine. It's all marketing. You don't need any of that stuff. And I started wondering, like, okay, well, how much is everything else in life? Well, you need conditioner because we shampoo our hair too much. Well, if we stop shampooing our hair, would our hair be as greasy as we think it would be? For the first 30 days, yes. After that, no. Our hair is producing so much more grease because we're putting chemicals in it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Our body doesn't need that. So I started simplifying my life without crossing a line where I'd be a distraction to other people. So deodorant. I don't use antiperspirant, but I use deodorant. And that's necessary for me, so I don't distract other people.
Mm-hmm.
And brushing my teeth. My dentist is like, you don't really need toothpaste if you brush your teeth every day. After about 3 weeks, I could tell. I could tell because my sister goes, what's wrong with your teeth? Okay.
So that's back a distraction. To
that's right, yeah. But simplifying your life. Anyway, so asceticism, you can make your cold shower easier. But then you're really asking the question of like,
but I don't want
what's
to.
The reason?
The reason why I'm doing it is because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be, like, if I'm going to do something that's difficult, I don't want to do it, like, the easiest difficult that I could do. Like, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it, it's not going to be fun, regardless.
Well, right. I mean, that's the thing. There's nothing you can do to make it.
It's
not going to
be fun,
suck.
Regardless. Yeah. So we should just embrace it. The whole point of it is to deny yourself and say, embrace it and say, like, no, I'm going to do this, even though it's hard.
Yeah, I think the right way to answer the question that David asked originally is, how do you make it easier? You stop thinking about yourself.
Right.
And you start thinking about
somebody
else.
It's way easier if, like, when
I... Before you turn the water on, you say, this is for my wife. Or this is for...
It's way easier.
You know, the souls in purgatory or whatever.
This is what I learned between the first time and the second
time. Now there's a purpose to it. It's not just, like, suffering. It's just not...
We're not Stoics. That's right. I mean, this is
what Mark told me, and I'm going to share it with everybody.
Yeah, please.
Okay, so instead of... What I used to do is turn the water on and be like... And I'd be, like, staring at it, you know, like, just watching the water go down the drain.
Like...
And then I'd, like, kind of work up... Like the courage to get in, okay? Maybe get my arm in first, but you know, and then just kind of get in. That's a mistake, okay? What you do is you just stand under the faucet
the shower head,
The shower head, yeah, and just turn it on.
Yep.
That's a way better approach than like trying to ease into it. You know, it's sort of like getting into a cold pool by walking down the steps or just jumping in.
Yep.
I mean, like when you do just jump in, you realize that was a lot easier than walking in, even though when you're on staring at the diving board, you don't want to do it. But still, it's my tip. It's my cold shower tip.
And I do a similar thing now. To assure that I do my prayer, I essentially am genuflecting with my hand on the knob so that I'm on a knee and I'm praying for somebody. And then as soon as I'm ready, I'm still in that position and I just turn it on. Then it gets all of me instead of just my head. My back is like... That's the part. It's like okay.
Yeah, that's so something that didn't get that. Yeah.
Well, and you know what I do is I don't get out, because if you stand there and let the water hit you like on the back, it's sort of like when you take an ice bath. If you don't move, it's kind of not cold after like 3 or 4 seconds. You know, like
it's not as cold.
If you move, or if someone like puts their hand in the bath or something, you're like, hey, you're messing it up. You know, I've got like a bubble or something around me. So I just stay in the shower.
Yeah,
and that seems to work.
Well, here's an image. Here's an image that I like to use when I give talks in formation other places. It's this image of the common priesthood. So we're all baptized priest, prophet, and king, right? And those aren't just privileges. Oh, yeah, it's nice that we are a priest, prophet, and king. No, those are obligations, right? They come with obligations to live them out. Baptized into Jesus Christ and thus his three offices, every single one of us. So how do we live out our common priesthood? We see a priest, let's say an ordained priest, right? And we say, hey, Father, yeah, it's a Sunday. And I was just in the church, and there's like 300 people there, and no priest. Are you going to come and celebrate Mass? Because we're standing at your rectory door right now, and I can see that there's NFL on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Father goes, you know, I celebrated it last Tuesday and Thursday, and I'm going to celebrate it probably another Tuesday and Thursday this week, and probably next Sunday. So I prayed for you this morning. That should be good, huh? No.
Have a nice day.
Right. Like we would say that's a bad priest, even though he's praying for us. Us in the common priesthood, we need matter and form as well. We need the matter that is what we're sacrificing. In this case, for a priest would be the bread and the wine, right, at the Eucharistic table. And then the form being the right prayers. So for us, we need prayer, yes. But to live at a priest has to make sacrifice.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That is his definition of a priest, one who makes sacrifice to bring unity between man and man and man and God.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us, I think, who are young and don't have children yet, or for those of us who may, by God's grace, have more children, who's praying for our future children? Who's sacrificing for our future children?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine our future child coming up to us and saying, hey, you're going to celebrate Mass today? Like, are you going to sacrifice for me today? No, but I'll pray for you.
I love you.
Right.
Yeah, love you so
exactly. Yeah. Going back to that. Absolutely. Yeah. So the shower can be that. It can be our altar. Other things can be certainly as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we have this obligation. So where are we going to do it? Doing it first thing in the morning is a great way to do it. And as my friend in Oregon City, Exodus Man, taught me, full C, baby. Full C, all the way cold.
Yeah.
Make your prayer.
Yeah.
And your sacrifice and offer it.
Also, like Exodus taught me, I don't actually have to shower every day. I thought I did. I don't.
Turns out.
I don't even, not even close to needing to shower every day, you know? But another thing, Exodus, like this is a brand new development in the Niles household. So my daughter, she's 7. She's about to, this Sunday, she's going to receive First Communion and Confirmation. And so it's
Jude too.
Yeah, and Jude and Luke will be confirmed. So I was telling her, like, hey, you're going to be confirmed. That means, like, I need you to start taking your prayer life more seriously. So like, she knows I pray every day. Like, when they wake up, they see Dad praying. or if I'm done praying, they know that I pray every day in the morning. So I told her, like, you're going to have a rule now. Like, you get up, you go to the bathroom, 5 minutes of prayer. So every day, that's like my new rule for her. And I totally am getting this from Exodus 90. So it's, even my daughter is becoming an Exodus girl.
Yeah.
In some way. And I just like, because this the discipline of that quiet prayer in the morning, don't put it off. I made the mistake also of like, oh, I'm going to be in the adoration chapel like in the afternoon. I'll do my 20 minutes then. That's great to like pray in front mm-hmm. of like Jesus, definitely. But if you just have to pray right when you wake up. It's just you can't get around that being the best time to pray. And so mm-hmm. I want to give that to my children because it's a great gift. And I know that they might not see it that way right away, but that's okay.
Yeah. But especially if she understands the why behind it too. Like, mm-hmm. hey, this is for your future spouse. You could do that.
Sure.
Or your relationship.
Or your vocation. Yeah.
Whatever it might be. Yeah, that's huge. That's such a gift for mm-hmm. sure. That's beautiful. Thanks for doing that.
So what do you say about the guys who say, listen, all you guys are focused on is like the negative aspect. It's just like, it's always, we're in Lent. It's always, you guys don't know how to feast. It's just always fasting. It's always, like, we're supposed to be joyful. Like, what is the, you know,
there are some people who hate on it, who think it's just too much.
Yeah.
Too much.
So what do you say to that?
So we released Exodus Advent this last year, mm-hmm. Right? This Advent exercise. And we got a message just said, you guys make every month Lent. Just like, right. Okay, great. Well, you're almost getting the concept, but not quite.
Uh-huh.
Right? So imagine Easter time. Yes, the church commands us to rejoice and to have greater praise and glory, if you will, honor and celebration and joy in that season. This is true. At the same time, we are not in heaven yet. What people think is when they hear Exodus is like, oh, there's just no joy there. Actually, there is great joy and there's great freedom in being Christ-like, a man who sacrificed daily and told us to deny ourselves and take up a cross daily and follow him. So when it comes to living this, let's Easter season. Okay, what Franciscan friar do you know in the Easter season that's going to be found Easter Monday with a jelly donut on his belly, his feet cooked up, kicked up, no habit on, and just right. watching television?
Right. Nope.
No.
Who's skipping the hours. Right. Yeah.
Not praying. No, that's not it. He's going to be praying. He's going to be doing asceticism. And absolutely, he's going to have a big fat steak at night because he's going to be celebrating the Easter season as well.
Right.
Both, but he's still human. He's still the side of heaven. He could still sin that day, so he's going to be doing it as well.
Okay, if you're listening to this on the radio, join the podcast, CatholicManShow.com. We're here with Nathaniel from Exodus 90. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus. Yeah, so,
so this now we is just like, keep rolling.
This is something that I keep talking about myself, but it's like, I just know myself probably better than I know other people, so
we can talk about Jim.
I know Jim pretty well.
Yeah.
But I realized, like, okay, especially my first Exodus, I'd be waiting for Sunday, but like, oh, I'd have like a Kit Kat bar or something. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna just destroy this on Sunday, like plow into it like the Titanic into that iceberg. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just gonna
12:01. This wrapper is off. This Kit Kat.
Like, I am gonna get wrecked.
It was off before. You still bit it. Yeah.
I'm not gonna eat it. I'm just gonna smell it.
Yeah.
Oh, but then it would be like, I'm not kidding. It'd be I'd be getting ready for bed and realize, oh, I should eat some more chocolate before I go to bed. Like, it's my, you know, like, otherwise it's gonna. And I would. And it, like, then I'd be going to bed just a mess, feeling like I'm not doing it right, you know. Why do I feel so bad? And I realized, like, I'm gonna quit relaxing disciplines on Sunday. And when I did that, I totally changed my perspective about Sunday. I realized Sunday's not special because you eat chocolate or because you like drink beer. It's special because it's Sunday, you know. Sorry. And then I found more of like an interior, I was like learning to rejoice, learning to feast, like on the intellect, because I found on Sunday, okay, I still have like a lot of my appetites are still quieted, and so I was able to reflect on like the joy, especially as Lent is coming to an end, getting closer to Easter, you know, the just like the joy of the resurrection and everything that meant in my life, and like it totally enlightened my Sundays, and that was like what I was feasting on, was this just intellectual bliss. And I told some of my friends that the highest good is to form intellect. I told some of my friends, like,
whoa,
you shouldn't be fasting.
Aquinas is right.
Well, and they said, you shouldn't be fasting on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I said, like, you know, I'm not. It's not like I'm hungry, guys. You know, okay, I'm just not drinking alcohol and not eating candy. You know, it's not like, oh, it's Sunday, I can't deny myself anything. You know, I should just throw moderation out the window. Because that was my thought, too. Like, oh, it's Sunday, I shouldn't be fasting. If I want something, I should have it. You know, but that's totally wrong. That's not what it means at all.
I concur. On this side of heaven, that's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But our world somebody described it to me in this way, like, we're always feasting. And so the only way for us to feast is gluttony, because we're always living a feast. So when we increase or add any discipline to Sunday, all of a sudden we're like,
what? You guys are going overboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. You don't even know what Sunday is supposed to be.
It's just really sad. Like, I love those people because at least they know that Sunday exists as the Lord's Day. So they have one step forward that most people don't have, which is huge. And that is a blessing in and of itself. But yeah, there's more. There's more joy, more freedom that they could access if they understood even more what the Lord's Day is, what the Christian life is.
Yeah. One of the things that we really pushed, and I'd like to get your take on it, whether or not we did this correct or not, was through this last Exodus 90, there was a lot of men who unfortunately, for whatever reason, didn't have a good group of guys around them to do it with. Mm-hmm. Either they didn't have friends close enough to them that would be willing to do it, or they just didn't want to do it with them. And so what we did was we formed groups, virtual groups, for those people, so that way they could at least check in with somebody, even though it's virtually. I've also heard that, whether or not it's an excuse or a legitimate excuse or not, of saying, like, well, I don't want to do it by myself. There's not enough guys around me to do it with me. Maybe speak a little bit about the importance of having men around you while doing Exodus 90, but then also, is it okay, even though it's not the ideal situation, to have a group that's online together?
So we did a study on this, especially during the COVID year, of, well, what was the effectiveness of Exodus for those who met in person, and what were the effectiveness of those who met virtually? And the effectiveness in and of itself of the guys who took this evaluation was nearly the same, okay? Which shocked us. We thought it would definitely be more in person.
Oh, yeah, me too. I thought that's not what you were going to say.
Right. However, we did a different study then later of, okay, what was the likelihood you finished if you were in person or with a fraternity? Because that other study was only of the guys who finished.
Right.
So that showed us that the chances of you finishing are much higher if you're in person than if you're virtual. Most of the time, it's because those virtual relationships don't have a grounding, if you will. Those guys might have never met each other who you connected with, connected together, right? Fraternities that have, let's say you went to college with a bunch of buddies and then you re-got those buddies together, you already have a relationship that you've built, you're going to do virtual because they've all moved away. That's a different story. Those guys are much more likely to continue on and finish because they have a relationship it's based on. So virtual isn't terrible. It just requires way more discipline to commit. I'm going to be at that meeting no matter what, and I'm going to be on time, and I'm going to make sure I have internet that works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be there, and I'm going to be honest.
So part of the problem with virtual is that there's no relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Or like precedent, you know, it's like you don't see these people, you don't run into them after mass,
right?
You know, so the accountability factor isn't as high.
It is often not as high.
Uh-huh.
That can be overcome, but you have to have a group of guys who is absolutely upfront about that. Hey, we're going to really hold each other accountable because we know we don't know each other.
Yeah.
But we want this. So it's got to be very upfront.
What do you say about someone who says, I don't have a group, I'm just going to do it by myself?
Yeah, then they're not doing it. It's just to be honest. You're doing something. But you're not doing the spiritual.
You might
exercise.
Be doing something that's good,
yeah.
But it's not exactly Exodus 90.
Right. So what we're trying to do with Exodus 90 is to live the Christian life in more fully, right? Mm-hmm. And asceticism often isn't in the Christian life that most of us are living, but it is a part of the Christian life. Fraternity as well. We're made in the image and after the likeness of God. Well, He is unity. It's Trinity. He is relationship. We are made for that exact same thing after that image and likeness, not just with our wife, because there's plenty of people who aren't married, both before marriage, if you will, and those who take up celibacy. They're still made for unity. It's not good for man to be alone still applies to them. Mm-hmm. So what? How are we going to live that out? How are we going to live out real accountability with other men? By actually having a fraternity.
Yeah.
The thing about Exodus and these prayer, asceticism, and fraternity that we focus on, if you're not doing Exodus 90, if you're not doing one of our other 20 exercises, that's fine. You still have to live these if you want to be Christian. Mm-hmm. So if you don't want to do Exodus because you can't find a fraternity, okay. You still have to find a fraternity. You still have to find community. So what are you going to do? That shouldn't be an excuse not to do Exodus, because it's essentially an excuse to not live the Christian life, which isn't okay.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah.
What do you say to people? Because this is another like kind of objection I have heard is that, oh, some of the disciplines are like, I don't need this discipline, you know. And to me, it's just like, how does obedience come in into the Exodus 90
like with
program?
The audiobooks. Remember we talked about the audiobooks?
Oh, yeah. We went round and round on this.
And thank God, I want you to know this. We found the FAQ page so helpful. Because when we, like... Us men, we're a little bit scrupulous, a little bit, I guess. It's like, well, is that really what it means? It's like, guys, we found out you cannot have juice. It is a sweet, it's like, well, is juice a sweet drink? You can eat oranges. Why can't you have orange juice? Well, because it's a sweet drink.
And they say no sweet drinks.
Doesn't say you can't have fruit. Says you can't have sweet drinks. Is orange juice sweet? It's exactly what it says in the FAQ.
Yeah, we put a lot of time into those.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, right. And it was like, there we go. Now we can just obey. Like, we don't have to be bitter about who's right and who's wrong. It's like, oh, okay. It's clear.
Who cares?
One of us is, like, one of us is
doing,
right.
We're
one
doing
of
the program.
Wrong.
The program says this. It doesn't matter if this is like what we want to do or not do. It says we're doing, this, and we're going to do it. So we just obey it.
Yeah. Obedience to a good master sets you totally free.
Even if he's like not perfect about stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely, there's great freedom there. But we don't think that as Americans. Freedom isn't obedience. Right. Freedom is doing whatever the heck I want, which isn't right. Isn't right at all. So, what were we talking about before that?
Like, people being, I just think Exodus 90, no one is at Exodus is saying this is the perfect spiritual program.
Right.
It is what it is.
Yeah. But you asked a question about maybe too much or about something else.
Like some people say like, oh, these disciplines are just rigorous. Oh, yes. I don't need them.
And obedience. Right. So there is in and of that a hidden discipline, if you will, regarding obedience, mm-hmm. which is giving up control. Mm-hmm. When we set our own disciplines or say, I don't need this one. For me, when I did Exodus the first time, it's like alcohol. My parents essentially never drank alcohol, very close to never drank alcohol when I was growing up. Uh-huh. So I had no problems. That's a gift. Huge grace. I've had no problems with alcohol, mm-hmm. no self-control issue. And at the time, I was a focused missionary, and I was working mainly with underclassmen, and I was on a fundraised salary. So alcohol cost more money than mm-hmm. a lot of drinks, especially water. So, and I wasn't drinking it with my students. So I had essentially no alcohol that year. All of a sudden, I did Exodus 90, and I couldn't have alcohol. And then I wanted it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More and more and more every day. And I was like, Lord, why am I frustrated that I can't? I should be able to have alcohol. Like, I don't have a problem with alcohol. This shouldn't be a discipline for me.
Right.
And then in prayer, the Lord's like, yeah, your problem is control. You want to control what you can and can't have. Uh-huh. And I was able to realize that only because I committed to something I didn't mm-hmm. have a problem with. Mm-hmm. I committed to be obedient to this exercise.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of Exodus tonight. It sheds the light on those things that you think, oh, I don't have a problem with this. And then you realize, oh, it's not actually this that I don't have a problem with. It's the pride of wanting to control my life that I have the problem with.
Yeah, absolutely. Man. But there's so many things that we don't even know about that we ought to be obedient to, mm-hmm. right? So, for example, for our listeners, if you don't want to be obedient to the next thing I'm about to say, turn it off now. But here we go. Days of Penance in canon law. Do you know what the Days of Penance are?
Well, there's the Ember Days.
In the current version of canon law, not named.
No, it's just
Ash Wednesday and Good Friday.
Yeah, 2 days.
Those are the days of fasting. But the days of penance are more.
Oh, so I do not know.
Canons 1249 to 53, in case anybody wants to do some light reading.
Okay.
Canons 1249 to 53 talks about this amidst a few other things. Days of penance are the season of Lent and Fridays of the entire year. If you're a lawyer and you see that exact sentence all together as one thing, the season of Lent and Fridays of the entire year. What canon law has just done is made Fridays of the entire year equal in penitence to Lent. Do we live that? 4th of July, Friday. Are we living that? Most of us aren't.
Right.
But we need it year round. We need that reminder year round that, yeah, Christ died for me and I'm a sinner and I don't deserve this. Mm-hmm. And I need to deny my flesh so that I can receive the grace that he has in store for me. So that I can open up a channel that I usually don't have open. But asceticism, self-denial, opens up a whole new channel that prayer doesn't open up alone for grace to come in. Yeah, I want that open all the time. And I can do that by being obedient. And yes. I'm free to do that now. Especially if you heard it now. Okay, great. Every Friday, day of penance.
Right. And every Friday is, you're supposed to abstain from meat. Every Friday. That didn't go away in Vatican II. But I don't know where that
If you can't, then from. It says...
well, it did say like it did say it, that like okay Vatican, yeah, you could do something else if you wanted.
It deferred to the Conference of Bishops, and the bishops the USCCB said
yeah,
the,
but they didn't. It didn't go away. People think that like oh, we don't have to do that anymore.
So it's no longer obligation under the pain of mortal sin or mm-hmm. sin itself at all. So yes, we are dispensed. The law is still the law. And I had a discussion with somebody who wrote in about this because I called it the law. Like the law says you need to give up meat on Fridays. He's like, it's not the law. We don't have to do it. We're dispensed from what? The law. So it's still the law. We're just dispensed from it. But we have to give up something of equal matter. Now, what's equal? Well, giving up meat is certainly equal. I know that because it's giving up meat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Now it's up to me. That's tough. The other aspect about it is canon law, the current version that we have, came out after the newest version came out after the USCCB has written this document. I'm not saying that it trumps it, but I'm saying the USCCB, one of the largest conferences in the world, said we're going to dispense you from having to give up meat on Fridays for these reasons, not, you know, health reasons, whatever else. And so because of this, everybody's dispensed from it. And the canon law still came out and said, this is still the law. Yes, US, you're still dispensed from it. That still stands. But we still think it's so important to unite us on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the USCCB, that document, super short, that dispenses us from it. One of the things it says in there, which is so interesting, that this is not an exact quote, but very, very close, okay? That by dispensing the people from the obligation to abstain from meat on Fridays, oh man, how does it go? We're dispensing you from the obligation to abstain from meat on Fridays with the hope that you... man, how do they say it? Oh, are more desirous to do it on your own. More desirous to do it on your own, which is just a weird thing. Like now you're free. You don't have to do it, but it still is the law. And we're hoping you're more desirous to do it on your own, which I mean, how many of us are?
Right.
Few. What I like to say to people is let's prove them right. Mm-hmm. Like let's be desirous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause freedom is what you ought to do.
Yeah.
The obligation to do what you ought to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and once again, it seems like something that's small, like, oh, I don't have to do that. You know, why would I do it? It's like, well, do it out of love. You know,
I
understand that, like, honestly, not eating meat on Friday is not really even hard.
Especially now with how delicious make fish and everything
salmon.
Else.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'll just have, like, 12 pieces of cheese pizza.
I make this grilled cheese. I'm from Wisconsin originally, okay? So I make this grilled cheese. It is just too good. Well, my family and I, we don't eat it on Fridays and Lent. It's just too good.
It's just like, I'm not even sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, but on a Friday, like throughout the rest of the year, it's like, yeah, come on, let's just have it. Yeah. Why not? It's yeah, I get it. Eating meat, it's not even really a sacrifice as much as it is an obedience. It's just something that sets us as Christians apart. And it's a recalling. You know, it just is like, hey, I'm not doing the same thing today I do on every other day. Why? Oh, it's Friday, you know? So it's not even so much a sacrifice as it is just a remembrance.
In addition, you got at something in there as well. And it's unity. Unity with mm-hmm. the body of Christ is key.
Yeah.
So asceticism, just like prayer and fraternity, both prayer and fraternity, it's obvious that they bring us to unity. Unity with God. But also unity with each other, especially when we pray for each other. And fraternity, of course, is unity with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And for the sake of us being a part of the body of Christ, thus unity with God. Asceticism also ought to absolutely bring us into greater unity. The church teaches us this. When are the 40 days of Lent? Well, she sets them and we all abide by them.
Right.
Not whenever we want. right? And the Fridays are Fridays, not whichever day of the week you want to pick. So they ought to the same. If it's not as hard for you, David, as it might be for Adam, too bad. Like, who cares? It's unity that's more important.
Right.
As opposed to, like, you know, I take 3 cold showers a day. He doesn't even take 7 a week. I take 3 a day, right? Right. Like, I don't actually do that. But I could be really prideful. Or I could get these greater asceticisms and say, I'm more holier than you.
Right.
When the greatest asceticism might just be unity. And just, I'm actually not going to do more than I'm asked or more than my community is. So when we live Exodus 90, we do this asceticism with our fraternity. If we choose, for those of the listeners out there who want to live prayer, asceticism, fraternity, the Christian life, without Exodus 90, that's fine. But do it with your fraternity. Live the same ascetic disciplines. Choose together. Some of them are going to be harder for you than those guys, and some of them will be easier for you than those guys. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Do it together. Bring unity into the picture.
Yeah, unity is the goal. I mean, it's I think, an appropriate analogy in marriage, that unity leads to procreativeness.
Yeah.
You know, and so when we come together in unity, we can be fruitful. It's like, that's when we are like uniting as the body of Christ. This is, you know, God, Jesus said he wants us all to be one, right? So rejecting some of these things that we have as a universal practice, really, I think we miss everything that we're giving up. We miss what we're lacking in those moments.
Totally agree.
Okay. So just to pivot, cause I have just a selfish question for you,
please.
The hardest thing and the most joyful thing about living on the road with your family. Because I traveled, like in my old job, I used to travel all the time. Of course, I didn't travel with my family, which is probably a positive and negative in many aspects. But I hated traveling.
Yeah.
Being gone. So what, like, how do you have fraternity? Like, how do you, like, you're on the road all the time. Like, who are you? No, I'm just kidding.
I'll tell you. I'm happy to tell you.
That's not what I meant at all.
Like, I'm in an Exodus fraternity with my 4-year-old.
Yeah. No. So what's the easiest thing or the most joyful thing about being on the road with your family? And then the hardest thing. And then how do you maintain fraternity?
Yes. So we'll start with the fraternity just because it's right there and it's the easiest question.
Sure.
I have an Exodus fraternity. I've been in the Exodus fraternity for 3.5 years now. 3.5 years now. And we've been faithful, meeting every week, which is great. And so we continue that. And during, of course, like most people, during COVID, we started meeting virtually now and then.
Yeah.
Most of the time, unfortunately, during especially the lockdown portion, is what it is. And so we got used to having that, and we stayed committed, which is great. So we often will still meet in person, but we don't live, we're not all in the same parish anyway, in the same town that we live in. And now that I'm gone, well, is what it is. I just stay faithful. I have to stay faithful to those meetings. And so I do. And my check-ins every single night with my anchor, still faithful to those. I know I need them as a man, right? And I'm super grateful for my anchor, my brother who checks in with me, for being faithful to them as well, you know, and holding me accountable because I need him, and I really appreciate that. So that's that aspect. Okay. Hardest thing, easiest thing, being on the road. I'd say the hardest thing is RVing looks great in lots of pictures, right? Like epic shots. It's
very Instagrammable.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. It's just, especially in the wintertime, which is when we started. We started in November and went through the winter. So we've made it through our first winter and our first 5 or 6 months, and I'd say the hardest part of RVing. So great. But yeah, every aspect of RVing was new to us, and things break, and you got to be ready to fix it yourself. And there's just a lot of little things moving all the time. Most RVers, either they'll go for a weekend or they'll go for like a long week or whatever, or even full-timers, they'll stay in one spot for at least a week. Well, doing missions, like doing formation for people all over the country. Yeah, I'm there for a night, maybe two, next stop.
Yeah.
And when I'm traveling in between, if it's a long stop, like, where am I staying? Travel America, Loves, Flying right. J.
KOA, I mean.
No, so I'm not even staying at campsites. We stayed at zero campsites, like zero RV campsites. Because that costs money. That's $40 a night on a cheap campsite.
It is $40?
For a cheap campsite.
Oh my gosh! I guess if you have a tent, then it's like $4.
But yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. But you get electric and you get the dump site and whatever else.
Yeah.
So that's $1,000 a month. That's a mortgage payment. We're not doing that. Like, that's just not a part of the mission. We're happy to see the greatest truck stops that America has to offer, and that's just it's a testimony to my wife and her ability to do that and to travel like that. But those would be the hard parts, like the constant up and going, up and going, up and going. So hopefully we'll get our speaking engagements closer together, because 14 hours on the road with two children is not the most exciting part of the trip. The other hand, my wife being such a missionary and me as well, we had people over when we lived in Fort Wayne all the time. Easily two nights a week, minimum, we'd have family or somebody over for dinner. So when you're talking about 2 to 4 nights a week, it's a lot of time where I've just been at the office. And now, yes, I'm with my wife, but I'm not really. You know, you guys get it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's
so this is kind of romantic for you, just to like
be in the truck.
I like taking road trips with my wife. I mean, I understand that's a lot different from when you're doing it 24 hours a day. But there is, you know, it's just like you and her in the front seat. Got all this windshield time, great conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's been the biggest grace. We've had more time together because of it. Yeah, it's made work harder.
So like car seat time, that's not like...
The girls have been really good.
Yeah.
And now they start to play with each other, even though they're each in their car seats.
Yeah.
A 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. It's just because they're facing, one's facing forward, one's facing backwards.
Yes. So
it's
just, yes. Isn't that that's great? Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they're cooperating, it's great. When they hit each other, it's a little different. But yeah.
You can't separate them.
We split apart now. Yeah. We weren't before, but now they are. Definitely split apart now.
Yeah.
So, but anyway. So, yes. Yeah. Those are some of the easiest and the hardest times. And we'll just do what the Lord wants us to do. And he gives you the grace, you know, to do what he calls you to do if you're open to receiving it.
You just got to like know that he will. And it's like, you know that he will. Just remember it, you know, and then like don't doubt it.
The best advice I think we got when we were going into RVing, and I think we can apply this to whatever the Lord's calling us into, but RVing was a more obvious one, is expect things to break. And then just when they happen, you're like, yeah, I expected this to happen. Go fix it. Move on.
What kinds of things break?
Oh, man. So many things are plastic, first of all, because they want it to be light. And then any trim pieces. If you've been in an RV recently, and they have beautiful trim, right? All stapled onto the wall. Well, you're taking your RV through an earthquake every time you move it, right? Like on the interstate. Most of us complain when we're driving our nice luxury cars on the interstate with the potholes. I'm driving my house. So things fall. Trim just falls off. And then I have to go and drill pilot holes and then put an actual screw in that piece of trim so it doesn't fall off again, you know?
And a copious amount of super glue.
Certainly helps. Like
maybe
well.
A toxic level of.
Oh, yeah.
In the winter.
We're going to need to stay out of the RV for a little bit, honey.
Put the windows down while we drive.
Yeah.
Should we do that?
Air
we
this baby out. Get this baby out.
Man, we had a hole in our floor. The slide, somehow, the wheel of the slide put a hole in our floor. And I was like, well.
Sounds like a problem.
Yeah, because then, of course, water could get in there and whatever else and destroy the floor. And a 2-year-old
could go out of it.
Oh, my goodness. Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, so this, we're like, well, what are we going to do? I'll just get a bunch of epoxy, and I'll just put epoxy over it. Well, it was cold in the winter, so the epoxy didn't dry for like 5 or 6 days, and it's collected all this dirt, and I've been trying to keep the 4 and 2-year-old off of that spot.
Right.
It's just like, it's what it is. What are you going to do?
Thank you, Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, and you don't even get like Saturday where it's like, all right, I'm going to go to the... Right. Hardware store, but you know, you could park in the hardware store.
I could,
and then it like because the worst, man, is when you get home and you realize, dang it,
I need this too,
right? I need this thing, or I got a size 7 and I need a size 6, you know, like just you know, back and forth. But you'd just be right in the parking lot.
That would be a good option, yeah. It's a good idea,
yeah. So, the last. You know, word to the men out there, maybe a word of encouragement to the guys who have done Exodus 90 before, and then those who have not.
Mm. If you haven't done Exodus 90 before, then my suggestion certainly is to pray about it. If you're not used to hearing God in prayer, and discernment is a difficult thing, then just go a direction. And my suggestion, as these gentlemen were saying earlier, go in the direction of Exodus 90 because it is the direction of the Christian life. And it's going to lead you to living a life of prayer, citizen, and fraternity in a very structured way. Great. If the Lord doesn't want you to do that, he'll make it clear. He'll put up barriers, whatever, and he'll tell you, don't do it. If there's no barriers or there's few barriers because Satan's going to put some up, just keep going and be faithful to our Lord. So that would be my first suggestion. But you need a fraternity, as you've heard already. So find those men, and God will give you those men if you're willing to cooperate with his grace. So go and start asking guys, no matter how awkward it is, because salvation is so worth the awkward invitation.
And they don't have to be your age.
That's right. I think that's a beautiful thing about Exodus
mm-hmm.
that I was shocked at. Fraternities mm-hmm. with guys of intergeneration, mm-hmm. it's just like, wow. Then you get insights mm-hmm. from other places in life, and you stop whining about the things that only people your age deal with.
Yeah.
That's so true.
And it puts it into perspective.
Like Jim. He's like, I don't know, like 2 or 3 years older than me. Jim. I mean,
2 or 3 decades.
He's like, he's just a few years older than me, but we're still friends. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're still friends.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge gift for sure. Mm-hmm. Are you still his friend? Do you think you're still his friend?
I have to be. Yeah.
He said he has to be. Okay.
And that's great. How you know it's a real friendship. When one of them says, I have to be.
Good fortitude.
Right. It's like, you guys are like actually friends.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so that's those guys. Those who have done Exodus 90, especially those who are in the biblical series, fortitude. Keep going. Keep your brothers engaged. Because Satan wants us to quit.
Yeah.
Satan wants us to quit. If you're not doing the biblical series, now's a great time to wrangle your brothers back together and keep going. Because now you have a few weeks since Easter. Most of us finished Exodus at Easter, but you could do it any time, right? But most of us who finish at Easter are like, yeah, so I haven't really done any asceticism for the last 4 weeks. Great. Get your brothers to acknowledge that too and jump back into the Christian life together. Mm-hmm. So that would be my encouragement there. Don't wait till next January and say, oh, I just need to do Exodus again, so I'll do it again next year. Like, no, mm-hmm. just live the Christian life today. If our Lord comes today and he says, you know, who looks like me? You don't want him to be like, I don't know you. I did 90 days ago, but I don't know you anymore. Yeah. Like, no, like sacrifice for your children, your friends, your family, whoever. Today. Start living the Christian life more fully again today. That's my encouragement to those guys.
Especially the prayer life, right? I mean, that's something I just don't think you should stop. If you're not praying, then you're going to be spiritually dead. You know, if you don't, mm-hmm. if you're not willing to commit to that relationship with Christ, then it doesn't matter how many cold showers you take. Right. It does not matter how many meals you skip or how many times you flog yourself, you know, like whatever. Yeah. If you won't pray, you're not going to heaven. Yeah. I mean, like, just to put it bluntly,
said that, right?
Like, okay, well, I'm still in a state of grace for now. Okay. I mean, like, really, if you won't pray, it's a matter of time before you just simply don't have the grace because you won't avail yourself of it. So, like, I would encourage everybody, once you're done with Exodus, there is no time off of prayer. Prayer
That's
isn't
right.
prayer isn't an asceticism. It's just like a requirement.
A relationship.
Yeah, it's just a relationship.
Well, if I'm gonna take a break from you for a while.
Right, exactly. Right, and yeah. you think like things are gonna be fine with that? So
this is like it comes back to the whole like part where it becomes intoxicating because you become you have such a deeper relationship with Christ, right? It's just like the more like I'm in love with my wife more now that you know we've been married for 10 years than I was on our wedding day, and it's because I've spent more time with her. I've you know committed myself to her. I've
right.
you know sacrificed for her. It's the same way, obviously, with Christ.
Right.
And listeners, don't take this the wrong way when I say this, right? But you hear men say, I hear men say all the time, yeah, but like I'm really busy. I have this many kids. I have a job. Like, when am I supposed to pray? What is more important than our prayer life? If we think we can do right. excellent work without a prayer life, without 20 minutes with our Lord, we're just wrong. We're ignorant to what the Lord has and where grace, where our gifts come from. If we think we can be a good husband without 20 minutes of prayer every single day, we're wrong. If we think we can be a good father without 20 minutes of prayer every single day, we are wrong. He is the only one who's going to give us the grace of patience and whatever other virtue that we know we need. Mm-hmm. It's going to only come from a relationship with him, and the wisdom to lead our family, the wisdom to lead the people in our workplace is only going to come from him. Mm-hmm. So we need to pray.
Yeah, the key to pray, the key to like having time to pray is getting up early. If you can't get up early, we go to bed. You go to bed sooner. That's the hard part about getting up early. Anybody can get up early if you go to bed. That's the discipline yeah. of getting up early. It's actually not getting up. It's going to bed. And like I don't care what your excuse is for not going to bed on time. Whatever that thing is, it's not as important as your prayer life.
Absolutely.
As your time with the Lord.
Your job is not as important as your prayer life. Your wife is not as important as your prayer life. I mean, your vocation and your prayer life actually don't conflict. The Lord has not, he doesn't set it up that way, okay? Yeah. Now, you might perceive you might think that they conflict, but they don't.
Taking time away from my family to
pray.
Right.
But actually, it's more important that you spend time with Jesus than your wife. Jesus will make sure that you and your wife have plenty of time together if you're like really trying to follow him. But
and he'll give you the right time, though, right? So like some guys like, yeah, well, I've just finished my day of work, and honey, sorry, I have to go do my holy hour from 5 to 6 o'clock. I know we usually have dinner at like 5:30, but sorry. That's probably not the time Jesus is asking you to pray.
Right.
It probably is first thing in the morning before your wife gets up.
Exactly.
That's an inconvenient time for me. You're right. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Ding, ding, ding. You're right. Yeah. You know, like.
But it's the best time for your family, for your vocation. So do it.
But, you know, you mentioned earlier, like, we're priest, prophet, and king. A priest offers sacrifice. So that's why I like really stress in the morning. And it's not me. Everybody, like, you know, some of the masters have come before us. They've all talked about the best time to pray is in the morning. And so as a father and as a husband, I want to have offered the sacrifice before my kids get up, before they're awake. I want to have already showered my family in prayer, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. I'm the first line of defense for my family, right? So I need to make sure that I am doing the work so that mm-hmm. I can do the thing. I mean, it's like, this is not optional. I don't think. Mm-hmm. I used to think it was. But anyway.
Nathaniel, man,
thank you for
being
here.
It's been a blast. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You have a great beard. Like,
I even have some paint in it. We were just trying to sell our house, so I was doing some
painting.
It's
a good touch. I mean, it's nice.
anytime you're rolling through Tulsa, make sure to hit us up. We would love the opportunity to buy you a beer, hang out for a little bit, get our wives and families together, and we can have dinner or something like that. And thank you so much for your dedication and for your participation in Exodus.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks so much. Thanks for your prayers, and please keep us in your prayer.
Absolutely.
Will do.
So go to, if you check it out, go to exodus90.com/TCMS. That's TCMS for the Catholic Man Show. It'll give you also an opportunity to, if you're very new to the Holy Hour, trying to figure out how to do a Holy Hour, they have a printable and mobile-friendly PDF of how to have a full Holy Hour that basically walks you through. It's foolproof. Even I did it. So it works. So exodus90.com/TCMS. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers.
Hi, this is Bishop David Konderla of the Diocese of Tulsa in Oklahoma. So let us pray. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thy intercession was left unaided. Inspired with this confidence, I fly to thee, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To thee do I come. Before thee I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word incarnate, despise not my petitions, but in thy mercy hear and answer me. Amen.